Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. How are you? Well, you know what? This was actually kind of a calm week, relatively speaking. I mean, you had gyrations in the stock market, like I'm sure some of you care and some of you don't. And we had Trump tweeting about the Intelligence Committee in the House saying that, you know, everything was all clear. Well, we kind of all knew that anyway. And we had some ominous warnings by that treasonous liar, Mr. Brennan, the former head, should I say Obama's handpicked head of the CIA, another deep stater, now a commentator on CNN. And, you know, on the surface, everything kind of appeared smooth. But, as always, there were stories bubbling below the surface. That's what I'm going to bring you today. And by today, I mean Saturday. Saturday, the last Saturday in April. Holy smokes, man, time flies. And, of course, I'm going to start us off with a story or two. And then there's a whole bunch of little things I'm going to cover, which, you know, which big surprise. The rest of the media is not covering whatsoever. And I'm going to give you a little teaser right now and at the end of two things I'm not going to cover. How's that? Number one, I've been doing some research on, and there's been a great paper published on Robert Mueller and all the nefarious and underhanded and really appalling prosecutions, botched and otherwise. Most of them botched, I might add, one way or the other. Either he got a conviction that was later overturned because he got the conviction improperly, including withholding exculpatory evidence, or flat lying. Or he didn't get a conviction, or he failed to seek a conviction when it was definitely warranted. I mean, this is going to be quite a big segment next week on next week's show. And the second thing that I'm not going to talk about today, but I am going to talk about on next week's show, which is going to be those two primary segments, is, you know, I have often talked about the fact that all these shooters, the guy in Las Vegas, the Parkland shooter, I don't know about the kids in Columbine, that was kind of the beginning of the whole thing, but putting aside the obvious Arab terrorists, the Allahu Akbar crowd, and perhaps they even qualify too, I don't know. I have always said that they all seem to have something in common. Number one, they have a look in their eyes. In fact, I've referred you, if you go back to those shows, I've referred you to their pictures, and to look at their pictures side by side, and there is a remarkable similarity, kind of in their facial expression and in their eyes. Did you see the, do you remember when the Aurora movie theater shooter, when they brought him in, he had that kind of wild shock of reddish hair, and I mean, I was really struck by his eyes. They looked kind of wild and crazy, and he looked, you know, the face looked just weird, the expression on it. And the Parkland shooter has the same look in the eyes and in the face. And the Las Vegas shooter has the same look. And you can go right down the list. You know, the idiot that shot up Virginia Tech from that tower with a high-powered bolt-action rifle had the same look. I mean, they all have this similar kind of, deer in the headlights, troubled, confused look, and the same kind of pallor in their faces. It's just really struck me how similar it is. And I've also brought you stories, I've just mentioned them, I've never done a big segment on it, on the experiments that the Russians have been doing with mind control. And this is documented now. So their military has been experimenting with mind control over soldiers mind control over enemy soldiers, and mind control over certain aspects of a vulnerable population. Vulnerable meaning there's something kind of wrong with them to begin with, which would make them susceptible to mind control. You'll notice that the other common thread between all these shooters, I mean, like, no exceptions, is they were taking drugs. They were taking some kind of psychotropic drug. Every single one of them, other than the Allahu Akbar crowd. The press is so busy trying to hide the fact that they're Arab terrorists, that they're radical Islamists, that they never get into the details on those folks. Just when it's the white guy or the white kid from the white privileged family, whatever. I mean, there's a whole shtick going on. But I find it remarkable that we have those three threads. The look in the face, the look in the eyes, the psychotropic drugs. And you notice there's another similarity. They're all about the same age, usually. The guy in Las Vegas was a little bit different. Well, next week, I'm going to be talking at length, I've been doing research on it, about mind control weaponry in the United States. That's right. It is very, very, very interesting. And it kind of dovetails into what we already know about the Russian mind control experiments. But it's basically based on electromagnetic pulses, which plant ideas and plant mental and emotional catalysts for taking certain actions. These papers came out. There was a FOIA request on something really not related to this. And, you know, the government is terrible on fulfilling FOIA requests. I mean, just ask poor Judicial Watch, who's been trying to get documents. I mean, sometimes they get them, sometimes they don't, for years on certain things, and have filed, 50 FOIA lawsuits, and to their credit have won all of them, although it's always a pitched battle. Just ask Devin Nunes and the Intelligence Committee on the documents they've been trying to get for months and months and months from Dirty Cop Rosenstein and Dirty Cop Comey and Dirty Cop, well, I'm not sure he's a dirty cop. I don't know what he is. The new director of the FBI, Ray. So, in true fashion, the government in this case screwed up and gave too much information, including an entire paper with lots of backup on the United States military's and the United States government's experimentation, I'll put that in quotes, experimentation with mind control through electromagnetic pulse. Which, by the way, is kind of the same deal going on and being used now in Russia. What tweaked my renewed interest in this, because I've always been kind of fascinated by it and I've always had this suspicion, if you will. But what tweaked my interest about 2 or 3 weeks ago, maybe it was 4 weeks ago, I guess, there was a naval intelligence officer, and he wrote a book. And on page 225, I'll just quote this very, very quickly for you. The secret government. Programs were put into place to create a dependent, non-working element in our society. The government then began to remove these programs to force people into a criminal class that did not exist in the 50s and 60s. The government encouraged the manufacture and importation of military firearms for criminals to use. This is intended to foster a feeling of insecurity, which would lead the American people to voluntarily disarm themselves by passing laws against firearms. Using drugs and hypnosis on mental patients in a process called Orion, the CIA inculcated the desire in these people to open fire on schoolyards and thus inflame the anti-gun lobby. This plan is well underway and so far is working perfectly. The middle class is begging the government to do away with the Second Amendment. I thought that was pretty interesting. So I started doing some research, and sure enough, buried, and when I say buried, I'm like buried, is this information that came out in this botched FOIA response to request by the government, which happens to have literally, I mean, this is, there's 20 or 30 pages. I can't, I could not cover it in this show with the other stuff I have to cover, and I want to go over it. I want to research it. I want to do a different research on some of the components of this for you, but it is fascinating. I mean, fascinating. And by the way, this document, it wasn't leaked. Who knows? Maybe it was a purposeful leak included in this FOIA. But it's the Department of Homeland Security Multi-Agency Counterterrorism Center, the Washington State Fusion Center. Huh. And they're titled Remote Mind Control. Quote, Remote Mind Control. This is actual government documents. So I'm going to be covering that for you next week. I think you're going to find it. I've found it unbelievably fascinating and unbelievably scary. And you know, given all the stuff that we've been covering with the deep state, the shadow government, which I told you about years ago, that's now coming to light, what we're seeing going on with the whole Hillary, FBI, CIA, State Department, Obama administration conspiracy on the Russian crud, on the exoneration of Hillary, on the attempted prosecution of Trump for things that Hillary did and Trump didn't do. I'm really getting to the point, unfortunately, where there's like almost nothing I don't put past the government. And I don't mean the government in total. And I don't mean the Trump administration. I mean the deep state and the shadow government. The fourth leg of government, the leg that the founders never saw, never intended, and certainly never meant to empower. All right. So those two big, big segments, particularly the mind control segment, which is scary, coming your way next week. I've given you a little taste of it here. You can do some research in the meantime. Now, we've got a bunch of stuff to cover, and I'm going to do my usual that I've been doing the last few weeks, my rat-a-tat-tat of a bunch of stuff at the beginning, and then some longer segments toward the end of the show. Some of the stations are curtailing programming today. They have some special programming, and so I'm going to try and keep this show shorter than normal to give this so they can blend it into their programming. And some of the other stations, by the way, for you, those of you on AM, some of the stations that are not doing whatever special programming they're doing in a portion of this time slot, they'll fill in with some other stuff if the show goes shorter. Of course, you know, I kind of gab, so who knows if it's going to go shorter or not. We'll just have to wait and see. And so today we're going to be covering, those are the two topics for next week. Today we're going to be talking about a very scary bill that was introduced in Congress on gun control. We are going to be talking about, I got an email, I'm going to be answering several emails with actual stories, and we're going to be answering an email about my claim, as the email said, my claim that the blue states don't seem to do as well as the red states economically in terms of population, et cetera, et cetera. Well, we'll give you some facts and figures on that, and I think maybe that will put that to rest, shall we say. My producer's beckoning me here. Yeah, so Robert Mueller, I was going to give you some teasers. I gave you big teasers there on the mind control, right? That's pretty fascinating. So, did you know that Robert Mueller just says, these are just a few, folks, I'm talking about. What I'm going to be going over with you is over 48 pages documenting all his dirty cop stuff. But Robert Mueller III, by the way, botched the prosecution of the Hell's Angel gang in San Francisco. This is at the beginning of his quote-unquote stellar career. And by the way, this is an article. You can find most of the stuff in the New York Times and Washington Post. All 18 of his indictments in that case, remember, this is just one of many, I'm going to be going over them next week, failed to deliver even one conviction that stuck. The Hell's Angel thing was a murder and fight and all sorts of stuff. It was not nice. He had four successful prosecutions on the first round, were all reversed on appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, 9-0. I mean, just like his henchman, Weissman, right? 9-0. Then, in Boston, he got involved in the post-9/11 roundup of thousands of Muslims, completely, these are American Muslims. And yes, you know, I got no problem with you questioning the Muslims and seeing, you know, what's going on at the mosque after 3,000 Americans died in 9/11 and all that kind of stuff. However, he broke a whole bunch of constitutional rights of these people. So I guess he's not too concerned about, you know, Trump's constitutional rights, that's for sure, or yours or mine. And it included arbitrary detention, beatings, and humiliations. All those prosecutions, because he did uncover some terror links, all those blew up. He didn't get squat. And then he botched the anthrax investigation. Remember that when that guy sent out the bunch of envelopes? This is, it must be 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, I mean, it's quite a while ago. But he killed several people. I mean, it was actual anthrax. In that one, he ignored a solid lead. He fingered an innocent man who, in the end, got $5.8 million of our tax money for wrongful prosecution. Those are just three little tidbits, shall we say, that I'll be going over with you next week. This is the guy who's the special counsel that Comey wanted in place and that Rosenstein coddles like a newborn infant, giving it any little bottle to suckle on that he wants from time to time, legal bottle, that is. Last show or the show before, I asked you to check out VoteTheWill.com. I hope you did. VoteTheWill.com. Get enrolled in their once a month surveys. Very helpful. Absolutely nonpartisan. And that information is used and transmitted to Congress. And it's one way to get, you know, I think they're up to maybe 500,000 now, 500,000 participants monthly. But the more, the merrier, you know. A bundle of sticks is harder to break, folks. Along those lines, I want to talk about elections. Okay, so we just won a special election by 6 points, which the press is talking about. Oh, that district went for Trump 20 points, and this is the beginnings of the blue wave. All right, whatever. Look, we won, they lost. But there's been several elections that they won, we lost. And what you folks want to do, and I've told you this several times, you look in the politics section on the website, www.ontherightsideradio.com, and send $10 to the campaigns of your choosing. Marsha Blackburn's on there. I have not taken a side in the McSally versus Kelly Ward fight in Arizona. I like them both. I mean, I can't tell you which. Kelly Ward is probably more conservative, Dr. Kelly Ward. But on the other hand, McSally's tougher than nails. I don't think anybody's going to push her around. She's very conservative. She's one of the first Air Force fighter pilots or Navy fighter pilots, female fighter pilots in the military. I mean, I really like them both. Right now, Kelly Ward is, this is in the Republican primaries for Senate. Right now, Kelly Ward is leading, and, you know, what I don't want to see happen is those two excellent women, it's too bad they're not in different states, those two excellent women kind of beat themselves up and have a friggin' Democrat get in down there, although a Democrat might be better than Jeff Flake or John McCain, who knows. Okay, we're also going to be talking a little bit about the DNC lawsuit. I actually have some actual information out of the lawsuit and from the masthead, that is the cover page that names all the parties, that I'm going to share with you. We're learning a little bit more about what Mr. McCabe did, probably in conjunction with Mr. Comey and certainly in conjunction with others at the FBI. I'm going to spend just very little bit of time on that because nobody's covering this specific part of it. We're going to talk about how Barack Obama set in place the machinery to fund terrorism. Intentionally, folks, intentionally. You got to understand that Barack Obama thought ISIS were freedom fighters. And not only did he admire them in many ways, but he also thought that his freedom fighters could help us knock out Assad. But that's not the only thing that Barry did. He had a unblemished, 100% batting average. You know, 10 bullseyes out of 10 shots, no pun intended, habit of helping terrorists financially and otherwise. We're going to go over that. He also set up a system. This is none of the of his poison pills. You remember the show I did, I believe it was week before last. You can put Barack Obama intentional whatever into the search bar if you didn't listen to that show. But he set up, through acts and lack of acts, all of which were choices, he set up a bunch of poison pills in the American system that were designed to fail. Designed to fail. Because in their failure would emerge what he really wanted to happen. This is true of healthcare. This is true of Fast and Furious gun control. And maybe mind control, too. Who knows? And it's true of Iran. And it's true of North Korea. And I can go right down the list. I went down that list the other day, the other show, so I'm not going to do it here. But I am going to hit on, as I promised in that show, what he set up to fail in terms of funding terror, including putting together a climate, putting together a structure where American businesses and other Western businesses are helping to fund terror too, because there's a profit motivation in it for them. You know, remember, Barack Obama is a communist. He's also an Islamist. Either one is terrible. The two of them together is petrifying and appalling. And anything he can do and kill two or three ideological birds with one stone, like the Iran deal where he gets all the Western businesses from Europe and America interacting with Iran, and they're making money in their newfound relationship, and of course the money that they're shoveling to Iran for goods, services, whatever it is going to fund Iranian terror. And, of course, these companies aren't going to want to see the deal crater, are they? Because they're making money. Which, apparently, some companies think the Second Amendment is their mission, but most other companies think profit is their mission. The guy was a master. In fact, he still is a master. He's still operating 100%, folks. This is the puppet. This is the puppeteer pulling the puppet strings on the deep state and the shadow government that he set up, that I warned about 5 years ago. I was the first one ever. Shadow government and deep state. Anyway, we're going to be talking about that this morning. And if we have time, we're also going to talk just a little bit more about this very dangerous trend now at Google, Microsoft, etc. Last week I told you quite a bit about it. The week before, I did a really large segment on what the tech companies are doing to control information, the type of information, the location of information, the existence of information that they don't ideologically subscribe to, no pun intended. And we've seen all sorts of examples now in the last 2 or 3 weeks, including, Diamond and Silk, right? The two black conservative gals. And we can go on and on. You know, Marsha Blackburn, who's running for Senate in Tennessee. I mean, Twitter took down her tweets because they were pro-life and mentioned God. I mean, please. And in California, by the way, we have a law that just passed, the Looney Tunes state legislature out there, which literally, and there's articles here under Constitution, look under the Constitution section on the webpage, on the right side series, on the right side radio.com. Basically, they are, if you read this law literally, they're outlawing the sale and reading of the Bible and other religious books. I want you to think about that for a minute. That's unbelievable. But it is the progressive left. Now, a couple of other things have come up here in, should we say, this high-tech deal, in terms of them actually starting to get involved in politics and elections, which is something I warned about just 2 weeks ago. I was one of the first to kind of sound the alarm bell on this like 3-4 months ago. It just took me a while with all the news when I'm only broadcasting once a week to get to the show. Tucker Carlson, if you remember, I told you, did a great segment. You could probably catch that in the archives on the Fox website. So that's what we're going to be covering. First of all, I'm going to tell you a little story. How's that? A little story. Yep. So we have, there's a spring ritual on the ranch, and that is getting the water going. And there is this elaborate system of ditches and ponds and, you know, mechanical delivery systems like a pivot, you know, where there's a pump and it puts water through this big thing and it swings around. That's called a pivot, and other types of mechanical delivery. Now, generally, we have water out the yazoo. We're just in perfect location at the home ranch. We have three big creeks through the place. We've built ponds that store water. We have it set up so that each terrace of irrigation for the hay fields, that water drains down and is used three or four times on different fields and then goes into a pond and then is redistributed again to more fields. But this year we're short. The snowpack, they say, the NRCS, the Natural Resource and Conservation Services of the USDA, they say that we're at 67% of normal snowpack. Now, far be it from me to be a stormy hydrologist, a stormy weatherman and a master hydrologist, but it seems to this poor old hayseed that we're a little bit shorter than that. Judging by the fact that getting to the upper ranches is like not a snowdrift on the road, usually there is. In fact, I'm kind of famous for trying to get up there too early, at least once a year, and having to dig the one ton out as I careen backwards, trying to get out of whatever snowdrift I got stuck 100 yards into. Both my mirrors, passenger and driver's side, will attest to the fact that the truck swings wildly during those maneuvers, generally hitting fence posts. But that's another story. So we ran around yesterday. It was a beautiful day. It was like 78 degrees, not a cloud in the sky, and we got the water going. And by getting the water going, I mean it's like a two-day deal. It's several people, 4 days, because one guy is burning ditches so that there's less, you impede the flow of the water less. You get more water to where you want it to go. It's not interfered with by grass and growth and all that kind of stuff. And the others are running around setting dams and ditches where you have sets. That's where water comes out of the ditch. And, you know, turning valves and opening head gates. And, I mean, it's quite a system. It really is. But anyway, yesterday was a beautiful day. You know, several times I kind of just stopped and kind of looked out over the greening valley surrounded by mountains. Quite idyllic. And I thought to myself, how real all this stuff is. And how surreal and unreal all this other crud is. And you know, if I had one wish, it would be for America to keep its advances, to keep its technology, although to control the four or five companies that seem to control that technology, but to keep its technology, to keep its advances, medical and otherwise, but to still have that sense of reality, that sense of grounded comfort in knowing what we do and who we are and where we are. And I guess that's more of a thought than a story this morning. But I thought it was worth sharing because it struck me kind of with full force yesterday amidst mud and water and canvas dams and greening fields. And I hope your weekend, by the way, I hope your weekend is as pretty as was my Friday. So, let's get started. Let's start with the gun control stuff. Yeti. You know Yeti coolers and all that kind of stuff? They have quite a name. I mean, sportsmen everywhere use them. I've seen them often. Pricey products, but apparently work really well, blah, blah, blah. Well, Yeti severed, this is like a week ago, suddenly severed ties with the NRA. They didn't give a reason. They just said, okay, the NRA, by the way, was using Yeti products for many years as promotional giveaways, when they raise money for special projects for kids. So it wasn't like they were using the coolers to store ammo. But Yeti severed ties, and I mean there was an instantaneous uproar. Now, you know, Dick's Sporting Goods, who severed ties and will not sell AR-15s, is now going to destroy all their semi-automatic weapons, you know, some, I don't know what they're thinking. But Yeti, the market that Yeti serves is, listen, your typical progressive who wants to take some chilled wine to the beach or to the club is not going to have a Yeti cooler, which is designed for, like, long remote outings or transporting game meat that's been flash frozen on a hunt to wherever it's going, whatever the hunter calls home. So it's their thinking is unbelievable. And there was an immediate response. So there is now a full-scale boycott of Yeti going on. In fact, it began last Sunday, just 5 days ago. And it is, it's nuts. Yeti announced, or the NRA announced that Yeti had dropped them a week ago Friday. And they weren't sponsors of the NRA. Let me repeat this again. They were sponsors of the NRA's charitable arm. You know, the NRA does a lot of charity work. Of course, the mainstream media doesn't talk about that. But that's where Yeti was involved. You know, the products were raffled at NRA charity events and for youth programs and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, the NRA, this was their statement. Quote, "That certainly isn't sportsmanlike. In fact, Yeti should be ashamed. They've declined to continue helping America's young people enjoy outdoor recreational activities. These activities enable them to appreciate America and enjoy our natural resources with wholesome and healthy outdoor recreation educational programs." Anyway, the hashtag is hashtag boycott Yeti. That's Y-E-T-I. So, and there's been like tens of thousands of stuff on Twitter saying people are selling their Yeti projects. One guy had a picture of his Yeti coolers, about eight of them, kind of forming a wall in his backyard, and he had targets painted on them. He was using them for target or backstops for target practice. Big deal. So I thought I'd bring that to your attention so that you too can participate in whatever we're going to do with Yeti. Now, the other thing I want to bring up on the gun control thing is, believe it or not, there has been a, well, actually you can believe it, there's been a bill introduced in Congress, oh yes, by Democrats, of course. You know, those people who really don't want to infringe on the Second Amendment, they just want to make sure that you got to be 21, you got to do this, you got to do that, and they're, you know, AR-15s can't be, so that's all they want. That's all they want. Just, you know, just ban assault rifles and raise the age to 21, we'll be happy. Well, not so much. As I've told you countless times, what they want is repeal of the Second Amendment, disarm you completely, so that only the folks in power have guns. This is, you know, folks, back in Rome's day, it was swords. Okay, I'm sure in civilizations before then, it was spears. Any means that a current generation has to defend their freedoms from a tyrannical government, that government wants to eliminate. Period. There are no exceptions to the rule. That is why the founders made it a covenant of negative rights, as Barry likes to call it. These are the things that come from God that government can't control. One of them is the Second Amendment, and that's the amendment that protects the other nine. You get that one? You got the other nine too, starting with the First Amendment, which the tech companies are working very hard on. Anyway, this bill that our friendly Dems, the progressives, introduced in Congress, this would actually start banning handguns. It would require a handgun purchasing permit. Wow. And in order to fund this new nationwide policy, the bill would pay grants to states to help them implement the new law. And they come up with a bunch of statistics that say that after states implemented some type of controls on handguns, crime went down. It's all BS. I mean, typical progressive lies. This would do many things, not to mention like fuel black market like you've never seen. I mean, you got to remember, there is 300 million estimated. It might be like illegal aliens. The estimate might be low. There's 300 million weapons in the United States in private hands. You would have to think, I don't have the stats on this, at least 50 million, 100 million, I don't know, maybe 150 million are semi-automatic pistols. But they want to require a permit to own one or to buy one. The bill actually mentions in its text the age-old left-wing talking point that 33,000 Americans killed from a gun in 2013, 90% of them died from a handgun. Now, just last week, they were talking about just banning assault rifles. That 33,000 number I've gone over on these shows, just put gun control into the search bar. 33,000, almost half of those are suicides. They forget to tell you that. Okay, there's another large percentage, which unfortunately are accidents. You know, this is not intentional. I mean, something tragic happened. And the remainder, you can go to Chicago, and that's about 5% of them all by itself. The Dems, I might add, don't have any bill about controlling crime in Chicago, nor are they willing to back Trump sending the National Guard in. But they're more than willing to take away your handguns and require a very expensive, very intensive, very subjective, which means if they don't like you, you don't get one, handgun purchasing permit. And to impose it on all 50 states and to dangle money in front of the states to get them to agree. So the outfits which are giving lots of money to these particular progressive Dems that have come up with this bill, it's actually on the House floor. I'm not making this up. Includes, gee, what a big surprise, Coalition to Stop Gun Violence, Connecticut Against Gun Violence, Giffords Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence, and Newtown Action Alliance. Now, if you don't think that the election 2018 and making sure that the Republicans, as bad as some of them are, I'm hoping they're still a bit better than a progressive Democrat. If you don't think it's important that we hold the House, and absolutely critical we hold the Senate, if you plan to get another Supreme Court justice appointed, and get the backlog that Mitch McConnell can't seem to get off his fat establishment butt and clear off on judicial nominees, Trump's judicial nominees to federal benches. If you think any of that's important, because those federal benches, folks, are going to be ruling on all sorts of weird gun restrictions at the local and state and county and whatever levels, unconstitutional pickings at your Second Amendment, and perhaps national laws like this one proposed, your handgun permit law. Why? If you don't think that's important, don't vote. If you don't think that's important, don't send any money. But if you think that's important, if you think the judiciary is important, the Supreme Court is important, your Second Amendment rights, and therefore your other nine amendment rights, including the First and Fourth, the Fourth, by the way, religious freedom. Did I just tell you about California outlawing the Bible? Basically, that's exactly what they did. Now, if you don't think any of this stuff is important, by all means, snooze and lose. Don't vote. You know, be complacent. Don't do your part and get 10 other people out to vote and make sure they each get 10 other people out to vote. Don't send any money. Just sit back, relax, and gripe when it all comes down around your ears. Okay. So that is the gun control rapido segment. All right. I got an email from a gal, I presume. It seems like a female name. Debbieman. I've never heard the name Debbieman before. I won't give the last name on the air, but Debbie Mann in Chicago, Illinois. Now, as I think we all know, Chicago is a very violent place where gun control hasn't worked one iota. Of course, the Dems blame that on the fact that there's no gun control in the states around Chicago. Because it can't be Chicago. It can't be the progressive Democrats that have run the city for 50 years, or Rahm Emanuel, or Barack Obama from Chicago, or Valerie Jarrett from Chicago, or David Axelrod from Chicago. It has to be somebody else, like an alcoholic, you know? I don't have a problem. And if I do have a problem, you gave me the problem. So it's, I don't have a problem. It's your problem. It's the same thinking. But it's an ideological brew that drives them over the edge. So, to Debbie Mann, if that's your name, thank you for writing. And what you wanted to know, I'm going to summarize it because your email was not very nice. Yes, it happens to be a fact that with the exception of one state, the states doing the poorest, and I don't mean just the poorest, I mean Illinois is broke, Debbie Mann. Your state is broke. Put in Illinois into the search bar and listen to that show if you did not. You are toast. You can't even pay your current operating bills. You were $16 billion in arrears on your day-to-day expenses, you know, like the power at the state capitol. That's how well you're doing. But let me give you another state, since you thought I made this up. How about Connecticut? You know, Connecticut's kind of a idyllic, pretty state. It's right next to, I mean, literally 45 minutes, the boundary from, maybe not even that, from the thriving financial center of New York City, southern Connecticut, and in fact, northern Connecticut more and more, is home to, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of Fortune 500 company headquarters. You know, Greenwich and Stamford and Darien and Hartford and New Canaan. And I mean, these are hoity-toity places, right? 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, $4 million, $5 million houses. Big coastline along Long Island Sound, which is, you know, both a tourist attraction, a recreational attraction, and obviously lots of money. When you're on the water, it's lots of money. And this was a state that was doing great. 20 or 30 years ago, when it was run by Republicans, Debbie Mann, go ahead and look it up, Connecticut was like number one in many, many, many things. Jobs, employment, per capita income, you name it. Low income taxes. Well, since the Democrats took over Connecticut, which was really about, it was about 20 years ago, I think there was one Republican governor in between, but he couldn't stem the tide. But after the last 8 years, they've had a governor by the name of Dan Malloy. Dan Malloy is from Stamford, Connecticut. Dan Malloy is a progressive creep. I mean, he's like, you ever watch Cuomo, the governor of New York, on TV, make me puke? He's like Cuomo. That'll give you an idea. So are his mannerisms. So is his speech. So is the vitriol that he spews. So since Mr. Malloy took over as the progressive head, not the Democrat, the progressive head of Connecticut, and of course instilled his little mini shadow government, deep state folks in all the state agencies, as you know, the 50 American states compete with each other, right? They compete for business, they compete for plant locations, they compete for jobs, they compete for immigration, all sorts of stuff. Well, Connecticut is one of those states where the new tax law, because the property taxes are so friggin' high, that a lot of these hoity-toity progressives suddenly are not getting the deductions they used to get. You know, it's fine when they're operating on your money, folks. But when the government is operating on their money, they don't like that much. So, in Connecticut's case, there has been a steady, in fact rapid, continuing economic decline. So the Bureau of Economic Analysis, this is the United States government, folks. This isn't Reed. This isn't some right-wing think tank. This is the Federal Bureau of Economic Analysis, which, if anything, would try and should we say, coddle the numbers of blue states. Its annual report came out. Your letter was apropos in its timing, Debbieman. For 2017, the nutmeg state, as Connecticut is known, came in 44th out of 50 states. 44th. That was overall. They do even worse in specific categories. The state's personal income grew at the slowest pace amongst all New England states. Public union governance, because that Malloy is like big into the unions. Income growth was a 1.5% for the 8 years he was in power. Wow. That's below Vermont, trailed Maine, by the way, almost by 50%, and even Rhode Island, which normally is like leads the pack of bad stuff when it comes to the New England states. In fact, the only state to do worse than Connecticut was Alaska, Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, North and South Dakota. Yes, those are red states, Debbieman, but if you know anything about the United States, Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, North and South Dakota are farm states, and therefore their income can rise very dramatically and can fall depending on commodity prices. They are not like Connecticut, which is a service and industrial, well, not so much industrial, but a service-dependent state. And Alaska, of course, is an oil state, and oil's been in the tube. If you look at Alaska 8 years ago when oil was going crazy before Obama's time, gee, another progressive, then Alaska was like leading the country in everything. I mean, like everything. In fact, they were so flush, the state was giving back $5,000 per person. No income tax, and here's your check for $5,000 because we got so much money from royalties. Now, I'm not done, as they say. I'm not done. So the data, if you're going to go over it all, Connecticut had no growth. 0.1% growth. The only state worse was Alaska because of the depressed oil industry at -1.6%. This was during a time period, by the way, that the United States had growth of 3.3%. By the way, this is not a one-year anomaly. This isn't just 2017, Debbieman, because I know that's the next thing you'll say, oh, well, we just had a bad year. No, this is looking back every year. If you look back every year since 2011, which is the year Progressive Malloy took office, in that very first year, because he was Gucci, 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 Goo with Obama, the state came out of the recession with a 4.9% income growth, the best in New England. But from there, Debbieman, it's been totally downhill. In fact, Connecticut was 49th out of 50 states in 2012, 37th out of 50 in 2013, 39th in 2014, 33rd in 2016, and of course 49th again, how nice, in 2017. Mr. Malloy's deal is like every other progressive's deal. It's like your state, Debbieman, a big problem. Okay? Progressive economics do not work. Ask the United States a la Barack Obama. Ask Illinois a la your folks. Ask Chicago a la Rahm Emanuel. Ask California, in fact, a la Jerry Brown. They're broke. They're totally broke. In terms of total numbers, they're worse than Illinois. In terms of percentages, Illinois is worse. But it's a 1-2 punch. Ask New York under Cuomo. It's all the same. Look up these statistics for yourself. But you wanted another example, so there you are, Debbieman. And you know what? It's all about political leadership and ideology. It's all about whether you believe in the state, i.e. the government, or you believe in empowering individuals. It's all about that. Now, let's go to the DNC lawsuit. So I dug up the masthead. That is the first page, which kind of lists all the parties and all that kind of stuff, in doing some research. Now, we all know how crazy this lawsuit is, and we all know, I think, how this is going to boomerang. I mean, the Democrats are going to, just like they rue the day they did the special counsel thing, even though they cling to it desperately. They cling more desperately than the bitter clingers cling to their guns and religion, actually. United States District Court for the Southern District of New York. Gee, you know, that's kind of interesting because that's the same, it struck me that that's the same district that went in and broke down Trump's, you know, Alan Cohen's, broke down the door of Trump's attorney and took all his privileged legal documents. Same district. I wonder if that's a coincidence. I bet not. However, so they asked for a jury. The plaintiff is the Democratic National Committee. You know, Keith Ellison, left-wing Islamist, unbelievable. Versus, here are the defendants, the Russian Federation, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of the Russian Federation, the GRU. Yeah, I'm sure they're going to come here for a trial. You bet. Aris, I'm probably going to mispronounce this, Aris Iskenderovich Agalarov. Sorry about that. My Russian's not, I guess I don't qualify as a Russian agent. Emin Ariz Agalarov. Joseph Mifsud, WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, Donald J. Trump for President, Inc., Donald J. Trump, Jr., Paul J. Manafort, Jr., Roger J. Stone, Jr., Jared C. Kushner, George Papadopoulos. George Papadopoulos? Seriously? Whoa. Richard W. Gates III, and John Doe's 1 through 10. Now, here's what they're claiming, okay? Computer fraud and abuse. Remember, this is the party of Hillary Clinton, folks. This is the party of the Pakistanis taking the server, taking all the information, stealing the server, putting it on disk drive, selling it to the Pakistani intelligence. Listen to my show last week, and I've talked about it several times. This is the party of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Man, unbelievable. So, computer fraud and abuse. RICO. RICO conspiracy. Wiretap Act. Stored communications. Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Misappropriation of trade secrets under the Defend the Trade Secrets Act. Washington, D.C. Uniform Trade Secrets Act. Trespass. Trespass to chattels. Conspiracy to commit trespass to chattels, and Virginia computer crimes. Those are what they are. Those are the actual things that they are. Wow. Okay. Like I said, they're going to rue the day they brought that suit. Discovery is a two-way ship. It's going to be very, very, very interesting. And while we're talking about that, let's talk about some more stuff we just learned about the Pakistani breach of our intelligence network through 44 idiot Democratic congressmen, including idiot Democratic congressmen on the House Intelligence Committee, and fostered and aided and abetted, as you talk about obstruction of justice, by Debbie Wasserman Schultz, then head of the same DNC that's now filing this lawsuit. So we have found out several other things just in the last, we're finding out more like every week, okay? These Pakistanis took the entire server for the House Democratic Caucus, the Democratic Caucus server. This is unbelievable. Quote, the server may have been used for nefarious purposes and elevated the risk that individuals could be reading and or removing information. This is the IG, by the way, the Inspector General. The AWANs logged in 27 times a day, far more than any other computer they administered. Longtime employer, Florida Democratic Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I can go on here. To make a long story short, because I've gone over this story several times, but that was kind of like a new revelation from the IG. One of the one of the Democrats, who is a progressive Islamist, right? That unholy alliance between the alt-left and radical Islam. His name is Carson, Representative Carson. And we have also found out now through these reports coming out that he along with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, were quite close to these Pakistanis. And that Carson kind of stood in the way of, as soon as this information came out, canning these people and making sure they didn't have access to any of these databases of these 44 congressmen, and now, as it turns out, the entire Democratic House caucus. He kind of went through defense, which gave them an extra 4 months to steal additional information. They were accessing 27 times a day, according to the IG, and to sell it. I mean, these guys don't have any, you know, the Amarons are after money. And to sell it to the highest state intelligence bidder, some foreign and hostile state intelligence bidder. It so happens, gee, imagine this, folks. Representative Carson has been involved, I'm quoting now, as a guest speaker, panelist, fundraiser, recipient of funds related to the Council on Islamic Relations, CARE, a number of its chapters across the country, the Islamic Society of North America, ISNA, the Islamic Circle of North America, ICNA, the Muslim American Society, MAS, and the Brotherhood's new proto-political party, the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations. Huh. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? But there's no alliance between the alt-left and radical Islam, folks. Tom Perez, in responding to all this stuff that's coming out more and more and more, worse and worse and worse, about the Pakistani Amran Irwan, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, now Representative Carson scandal, which, of course, the press is not covering. I mean, once in a while you'll hear it on Hannity or Levin, but in terms of the press covering this, zilch, zippo, crickets. During the presidential campaign, Tom Perez, he's the DNC chair now, Keith Ellison is number two, another progressive Islamist. During the 2016 presidential campaign, Russia launched an all-out assault on our democracy and found a willing and active partner in Donald Trump's campaign. This constituted an act of unprecedented treachery. The campaign of a nominee for president of the United States in league with a hostile foreign power to bolster its own chance to win the presidency. Did he just describe Hillary Clinton? Did he just describe Debbie Wasserman Schultz? What? These guys are brilliant in how cracked they are. How cracked they are. Yeah. Let me tell you. I'm going to have more. I'm going to follow this, because this is going to be really interesting. I mean, Trump is an experienced civil litigator, and his attorneys, I guarantee you, are experienced civil litigators. And I think what's going to come out of the discovery process in this deal is going to be unbelievable. And there might be more stuff coming out in this deal than Congress can get from Rosenstein, than the IG's been able to uncover with all the skullduggery and the attempts by the FBI to hide text messages and all that stuff. It's going to be very, very interesting. Which brings us right into talking about skullduggery and treason to McCabe. Guess what we found out? McCabe altered the 302 of the Flynn interview conducted by Peter Strzok and others. The 302 is the official transcript, if you will, or you know, notes of the official version of the interview of a subject or a target or an informant or whatever that the FBI conducts. 302s are inviolate. 302s are put together by the agent who's in charge of the particular interview. I mean, he's the one who's there. They cannot be changed, period. Apparently, Mr. McCabe changed the 302. Not only did he change the 302, which is like highly, I mean, really a big no-no, but he also ordered that all the previous drafts and revisions of the 302 be destroyed. Gee, kind of sounds like Hillary Clinton and her 33,000 emails. Well, it just so happens that, you know, the judge changed on the General Flynn case, and the judge has ordered, he's not accepting Flynn's guilty plea until Mueller hands over all the exculpatory evidence, that is, everything that would prove that Flynn didn't lie. And, of course, we have found out that Strzok himself in the his 302, and by he was no lover of Trump or Flynn, said he didn't think Flynn lied. And the other agents there didn't think Flynn lied. Flynn only was caught, quote-unquote, in a lie and forced to plead guilty by Mueller, who, when Mueller, dirty cop that he is, was colluding with McCabe, dirty cop that he is, and Comey, dirty cop that he is, to change the 302 so that it appeared that Flynn lied when he did not. And then to destroy the evidence of their tampering with the 302. I mean, this is like a triple, quadruple, quintuple, felony, treachery, treasonous whammy. And the new judge, whose name is Judge Emmett Sullivan, he just so happens to be the judge. He was the judge on a couple of deals that Weissman did, where he caught Weissman changing documents, withholding exculpatory evidence, et cetera, et cetera. And he was also, listen to this, this is interesting, he was also the judge on the Ted Stevens, you know, the United States Senator from Alaska, and who was wildly popular in Alaska. While Mueller concocted this story of some type of, I mean, really low-level type corruption on the part of Ted Stevens and his daughter. They supposedly had a lodge or cabin or whatever built, and it was built for far less than it should have been built for, and therefore that was an improper campaign contribution. And Mueller timed the whole thing so that Ted Stevens got indicted 8 days before Ted Stevens' election. Even then, Ted Stevens, a Republican, only lost the seat by 2%. Tragically, by the way, Stevens was killed later in a plane crash. However, that's not the point of this story. Stevens was totally innocent. The judge on that case reopened that case when he stumbled across exculpatory evidence that Robert Mueller, yes, this is going to be another one of our next week's deals, that Robert Mueller purposefully altered and purposefully hid. It turns out that Ted Stevens not only did not underpay for his lodge or cabin or house or whatever it was, he overpaid for it. He paid more than market to build it. And Mueller hid that evidence. So posthumously, or right before his death, this same judge now that's put the kibosh on the Flynn plea, this same judge, actually appointed a special prosecutor himself to investigate whether the prosecutors, that includes Mueller, should be indicted. That's how nasty their actions were. So this judge has dealt with Mueller. He has dealt with Weissman. He's dealt with the whole Motley crew and how crooked, what dirty cops they are. This is going to get pretty interesting, folks. And now with this 302 stuff coming out, McCabe's alteration, which is coming out of the IG's office, etc. I think I actually have a couple of quotes here. All right. Yeah, both of the prosecutors, by the way, in the case of Ted Stevens, were suspended. I mean, basically, they kind of lost their law licenses. This was reported on, by the way, by Mike Cernovich, if you'd like to look at the stories. It's unbelievable. There's a 500-page report, so that you know, by Henry F. Shuki III. That was a special prosecutor that this judge appointed when he found out all this dirty stuff going on in the Stevens case, which has continued in a number of other cases, and is continuing now in Flynn's case and continuing in Trump's case by the very same people. The legal community, as law professors, described it as a milestone in the history of prosecutorial misconduct, unquote. Wow. All right. That kind of leads us right into Comey. Now, I don't know if you've watched this pathetic excuse of a dirty cop do his, you know, do his stuff. But I personally, and I can't stand the guy, but I personally have seen at least four or five variations of answers from him. He actually said to Brett Baer the other night that he didn't know that this, that the Steele dossier was funded by the Democrats. In fact, he tried to tell Baer that it was funded by the Republicans. Oh, yeah, well, it was begun by the... This is known fact in documents, flatly untrue. Just last week, in another interview, he was saying it was funded by the DNC. I mean, that's just one thing. You know, one of the things that worries me is that Comey and McCabe and Strzok were so over the top in what they were doing. There's no way that they could have been doing this without the knowledge of a bunch of other people. We know who some of those people are. They're no longer at the FBI or demoted, right? It's Baker, the former general counsel, and Lisa Page, the attorney for McCabe, and Straczynski, the public affairs guy who left. So we know who some of them are, but who are the others who knew about this and didn't say anything? I mean, how deep does this corruption go at the top of the FBI? Does it all go all the way down to middle management? I mean, was Obama, McCabe, Comey, all those guys, Brennan at the CIA, were they in there long enough to actually permeate their treasonous filth down several layers of corpus in these outfits? That's something we're going to have to find out, because all these people have to go. I mean, being complicit is the same as doing it. The other thing Comey's been talking about is he admits in these interviews, I couldn't believe it, he admits in these interviews that, I mean, I was having trouble kind of enunciating it, that he reopened the Hillary investigation. We happen to know that behind the scenes, he reopened it because the FBI office that found all this stuff was about to take it public because they were so upset McCabe had been sitting on it for 5 weeks before the election. But he opened it and closed it quickly to make sure that his bases were covered, that, you know, it was opened, but that it was closed in time to not affect the election and to send a message, this is almost his exact words, to send a message to the American people that Hillary Clinton was A-OK. What? Wow. So this guy is like admitting to crime after crime after crime after crime and lying his butt off. It's really unbelievable. It's unbelievable. All right. That's going to bring us to our last segment, folks. So we have Barack Obama, and we have his poison pills that he brilliantly, evilly, and with great bad effect, as was intended, inserted into the American and other systems around the world. Because he's a globalist, remember. He doesn't want just the socialist states of America. He wants a socialist planet of Earth. And one of the ways that he did it was funding terrorism, because it keeps people scared. And that means if people are scared, they're more dependent on the government. Remember, everything was designed to, in the end, lead people to believe that they could do less for themselves, a la, like, defend themselves, Second Amendment, or healthcare, and that they had to turn to the government to take care of all these failing things, which, of course, were put into place so that they would fail. It's a dastardly scheme. But one of the things was, look, he directly funded terrorism. He sent $156 billion plus $1.7 billion in cash in various currencies on pallets in the dark overnight on C-130 cargo planes to Iran. We all know where Iran's spending the money. This is not rocket science. Okay. Speaking of rocket science, yes, they're spending the money with North Korea for rocket technology, because they were allowed to continue their rocket technology and spinning their centrifuges under Obama's deal. Because, gee, if they get an atomic bomb and use it, or they get the atomic bomb and have a threat, who's going to protect us? Oh, the government. That's right. Gotcha. Not to mention that he also helps his Islamist buddies. His whole plan was to destabilize the Middle East, folks, to create this wave of refugees everywhere, particularly Europe, so that people would once again turn to government because their societies were being affected. I mean, ask the people in Sweden, ask the people in Germany what's going on, although I think they're getting sick of their governments. It's actually working in reverse there. He wanted to undermine Middle Eastern sovereignty, particularly the Saudis. You know, he's a Shiite Muslim. The Saudis are Sunni Muslims. This has been an age-old, and by age-old, thousands-of-year-old feud between various sects of Islam. He did everything he could to aid the Shiite countries like Iran, and he did everything he could to undermine the Sunni countries like Saudi Arabia. That was also kind of an adjunct of his war on oil, on fossil fuels. I mean, the guy was brilliant. The guy is brilliant. Very dangerous. Very dangerous. So the Iranian government, the Iranian government, think about how circular this is, takes the money and invests it in all sorts of terror activities in Iraq and Syria, and in support of terrorist activities in Afghanistan around Israel, one of America's closest allies. And what does the United States do? Oh, you know, we have to go defend all these interests. And using that as a pretext, Obama actually gives arms to, I've done shows on this, arms and money to ISIS folks. You know what his CIA director, Brennan, crooked, another dirty cop, what Brennan was talking about? Well, the moderate Syrian forces. The moderate Syrian forces, my patuki. They were ISIS. That's why Obama didn't want to take ISIS out when his military told him to in 2014, when they had not yet invaded Iraq. And the more he empowered ISIS, his golden-haired, I'm being funny, his golden-haired freedom fighters, the more he could undermine Assad, upset the apple cart of stability in the Middle East, create more refugees. I mean, so what if 500,000 men, women, children died? I mean, that's a minor thing to Obama and the progressives. And therefore foister more things that didn't work and more things that government could do for you. And by you, I mean America, Europe, Western civilization, because you can't do it for yourself. It's really unbelievable. And I'm at about an hour and 20 minutes here, and I'm about out of time, based on the messages that I was given before doing this particular show for this particular day. Next week we'll be at our full 2 hours, and boy, don't miss it. I'm telling you, I've given you some teasers on Mueller. And I've given you some teasers on this really interesting, really scary mind control thing that both Russia and America are involved in. This is not a maybe now. They are involved in it. Now, the extent to which it's employed, being used, Project Orion, I don't know. But next week you will know what I know and you can form your own conclusions. And next week we will also finish up this little segment at the head of it, which is how Obama set up kind of a business structure for Western companies, American and European, to continue funding terrorism after he gave it its jump start with $150 billion. To create more instability so that we would need our government more. Pretty amazing. I hope that you have an absolutely terrific day and a terrific tomorrow. I hope wherever you are at is as pretty as the ranch was yesterday, and I hope whatever you are doing brings you as much satisfaction as playing in muddy ditch water did for me. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. See you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.